Welcome to the Federal Society's Practice Group podcast, your source for current issues within the legal practice. Today, Clint Bullock, a member of our Civil Rights Practice Group, is discussing school vouchers. As always, the Federal Society takes no position on particular legal or public policy issues. All expressions of opinion are those of the speaker. And now, let's hand it over to Mr. Bullock.
This is Clint Bullock of the Goldwater Institute in Arizona, talking about the issue of school choice. In 2009, a family had to make a momentous decision. It's the kind of decision that many families around the country face, if not all families with kids, and that is where they should send their kids to school. And this family took a great deal of time and expended a great deal of effort to examine all of the public schools in their new city, which happened to be Washington, D.C. And after they looked at all of the public schools, they decided that not one of them was good enough for their kids and was appropriate for their individual needs and talents. So they went outside the system and expended a great deal of money to send their kids to a private school. That family, of course, was the Obamas. And during the campaign, President Obama repeatedly stated that he did not think that school choice programs were good for the country. But as a parent, when it came time to make a decision of what is best for his kids, he found that school choice was an imperative. And it is as a parent that Mr. Obama is correct on this issue. A long time ago, when the Clintons made a similar decision for their daughter, the godmother of the Milwaukee school choice program, Polly Williams, herself a Democratic member of the state legislature, quipped that the Clintons should not be the only people who live in public housing who get to send their kids to private schools. And of course, that exact same principle applies to the Obamas as well. And that's really what it's all about, is extending educational opportunities beyond the public sector to children who lack the resources to attend those schools. And this issue is of greatest importance to children from low-income families, and particularly Black and Hispanic families. Many of those kids are consigned to some of the worst schools in the country, and yet they lack the financial resources to do anything about the conditions that they face. Stephen and Abigail Thernstrom reported in a recent book that the average high school graduation level, the achievement level for Black kids 10 years ago, was 3 academic years. In other words, the academic gap between the average Black high school senior and the average white high school senior was 3 academic years. 10 years later, billions of dollars later, myriad reforms later, that number finally has changed. It's now 4 academic years. So how can we expect Black and Hispanic kids and other low-income kids to compete effectively to enter the job market or to go on to higher education if they don't have the tools? That's what school choice addresses. The modern school choice movement began in 1990 when Polly Williams, who was not only a Wisconsin representative but Jesse Jackson's campaign manager, looked around the Milwaukee public schools and found that they were filled with violence, that they had a dropout rate in excess of 50%, and that even the kids who managed to graduate were scoring very low on tests and did not possess the skills to go on to higher education. And she noticed that a lot of the public school teachers in Milwaukee were sending their kids to private schools. Now, these people are, of course, the most informed consumers in the system. So Williams sponsored a bill that would allow a fraction of Milwaukee's school children, 1%, to go to non-sectarian private schools at public expense. and not the usual public expense, but just a fraction of the amount of money that would otherwise be spent on kids in the public schools would be eligible to be spent instead as full payment of tuition in participating non-sectarian private schools. And that program, which now is approaching two decades old, has been a spectacular success. It has been a success on two levels. It has worked for the kids who have chosen to go to private schools, and it's been most pronounced in its success in terms of graduation rates. Whereas the typical graduation rate in the Milwaukee public schools is roughly 50%, the kids who attend private schools, where the expectations are much higher, is well in excess of 90%. And it's also been a success in terms of creating competition with the public schools and forcing the public schools to improve. If you go to Milwaukee today, you will see one street corner where there is a regular public school, a private school that participates in the choice program, and a public charter school. The number of choices that Milwaukee parents have is greater than any other city in the United States, and school choice has been the tide that has lifted all boats. As the kids are doing well in the private school choice program, they're also improving in the charter schools and the regular public schools in Milwaukee. And the shackles have largely been removed from the public schools so that they can effectively compete with their new private alternative. Other programs have blossomed all around the country. There are voucher programs in Cleveland, Ohio, and voucher programs for kids with disabilities in Florida and other states. There are tax credits both for parents who send their own kids to private school in places like Iowa, and tax credits for contributions to private school scholarship funds, primarily for low-income kids in places like Arizona and Florida. And the results have been very, very positive. Kids who previously had nowhere other than poor performing public schools now have an opportunity to go to better schools, not 10 years from now, not $10 billion from now, but today. And these programs have ushered in incredible improvements in many instances in the public schools. Perhaps the best example is in Florida, where former Governor Jeb Bush introduced a whole series of educational reforms, starting with grading the public schools, allowing kids in poor-performing public schools to opt out to other better-performing public schools or to private schools using vouchers, and then intervening in the worst-performing public schools to create new schools that would be more effective. The threat of competition from vouchers in Florida caused dozens of public schools to get off the failing list and to lift themselves up by doing things that they should have been doing all along, like having all year round school and concentrating resources on the kids with the greatest academic problems. As a result of these sweeping reforms, Florida's low-income kids now score better on national tests than the educational average for all school children in states like Arizona and California. So it's the kids at the bottom of the ladder who have profited most from school choice. Now, there has been one constant in the battle over school choice, and that has been litigation. You know that you have not achieved anything in the education reform arena if it is not challenged in court. And so legal challenges to school choice programs have become as inevitable as death and taxes, and perhaps even more painful in some instances. Every school choice program of significance, with the exception of Florida's program for special needs kids and a few other tax credit programs, has been challenged in court. And the primary issue initially was the First Amendment Establishment Clause. And it must make the framers of the Constitution roll over in their graves to notice that the teachers' unions and people against the American Way and other groups that challenge these programs would purport to argue that the First Amendment prohibits the ability of states to provide funding that can be used outside of the public school system. I mean, it's simply a nonsensical idea that that constitutes an establishment of religion, which is the language of the First Amendment. And indeed, after years of litigation, that issue was definitively ruled upon by the United States Supreme Court in Zelman versus Simmons-Harris, which unfortunately was a 5-4 decision. The 12 years of litigation over the religion issues that ultimately culminated in the Simmons-Harris decision is the subject of a book that I wrote a few years ago for the Cato Institute called Voucher Wars, Waging the Legal Battle Over School Choice. And for those interested in public interest law or this issue in particular, I hope you'll find it a good read. In any event, though, the court articulated two common sense criteria to guide the legality of school choice programs. And that is, first, is the program one that allows private options among a broader range of educational options so that there's no finger on the scale in support of private schools, but private schools are just one of the many options available? And second of all, who makes the decision on where to spend the educational funds? Is it the state? If so, there could be a problem if religion is involved. But if it's an individual, like individuals who use Pell Grants or student loans to choose religious colleges, that's totally fine. Making funds available to parents in a neutral fashion with regard to religion to use at the school of their choice is totally constitutional. Unfortunately, since the Zelman decision, a number of cases have arisen that have been waged on state constitutional provisions, often called Blaine Amendments, which are the result of a very bigoted period in American history in which public funding, which was freely flowing to Protestant schools, was being denied to Catholic schools, which were referred to as sectarian schools in the constitutional amendments. Properly construed, even these amendments do not prohibit voucher programs because the language of these amendments typically prohibits aid or support of religious schools or sectarian schools. And vouchers are not aid in support of religious schools. They're aid in support of students, again, just like the GI Bill or Pell Grants. A number of states have held exactly that, but others, like Arizona in striking down voucher programs for kids in foster care and kids who with special needs, have ruled that they preclude voucher programs. And that issue may ultimately have to be taken up by the United States Supreme Court because such decisions affirmatively discriminate against religious schools. So who opposes school choice? Well, the usual suspect are groups like the teachers' unions, who of course have a huge vested interest in the status quo and in jobs, school districts that don't want to lose their power, but also groups that, like People for the American Way, who are just very, very hostile to any sort of private sector solution and who I believe properly view public schools as effective mechanisms for sowing political correctness among our population. And then groups like the American Civil Liberties Union, they are probably the most sincere and principled opponents of school choice because they honestly believe that the moment a dollar of public funds crosses the threshold of a private school, not only at the K-12 level but at the post-secondary level, is unconstitutional, is an unconstitutional establishment of religion. I think that they have no basis in history for that view, but it is a sincerely held view. But we've also seen the ACLU argue in particular states like Florida that voucher programs violate the state constitutional requirement of a uniform public education. And if there's any organization that has been more active in challenging uniformity in public education, it's been the ACLU. And yet, when they see people leaving the public school system and taking their educational dollars with them, that becomes intolerable, and they argue in favor of educational uniformity. The one group that is probably most shocking in its opposition to school choice is the NAACP. And I really think that the NAACP has made an unholy alliance with the teachers' unions to oppose a program that not only overwhelmingly benefits its constituency, but one that is overwhelmingly supported by its constituency. And we've seen instances like in Florida where the NAACP is on one side of a school choice lawsuit and the National Urban League is on the other side of the lawsuit supporting school choice. So I think there's a fracturing of the old alliances with those who were genuinely dedicated to opportunity supporting school choice and those who are wedded to and who benefit from the status quo, like the NAACP, resisting it. So these battles are difficult every step of the way. They remain difficult politically because the teachers' unions are so powerful. And as we saw with Barack Obama and the Democratic Congress, which have limited the future of the District of Columbia voucher program, many of the people who voted to discontinue that program beyond the kids who are currently enrolled in the program send their kids to private schools, but they are thwarting the opportunity of many others to exercise the best choices for their children. So school choice is ultimately a winning issue. It is one that creates a non-traditional alliance between low-income people, black families, Hispanic families, and conservatives and libertarians who are ardently in support of school choice. It's also an issue in which a great deal of volunteer help is necessary. It is very difficult to overcome the special interest groups, both in the political arena and in the legal arena, but there is nothing more important that we could possibly do in terms of devoting our own time and resources to promoting a particular issue. This really is the vindication of Brown versus Board of Education and the promise of equal educational opportunities for all school children. The issue of education is really probably the most important public policy issue in our country. And the reason is because America is beginning to lag terribly in international competition. We have countries that weren't remotely in the same boat as the United States economically, outpacing us dramatically in science and mathematics and so forth. So we've really got to break the mold. And in breaking the mold, we are doing exactly what America has done in other areas to become the leader in the world, and that is introducing the concepts of choice and competition, marketplace solutions to education. If we were to design an education system today from scratch with no preconceptions, we would never come up with a massively regulatory, top-down system with bricks and mortar, where every child is treated the same as every other child in terms of the teaching that goes on. We would design a system that is child-centered, that allows each child to pursue the education that is appropriate to their skill levels, to their desires, to their individual personalities. And we've got the technology to do it. What we don't have is the political infrastructure to accomplish that. But school choice allows every parent to pursue the education that is best for her child. That is really the argument for school choice. I believe that it is the fundamental civil rights battle of our era. And it's sad to see people like Barack Obama and others who exercise it for their own children and deny it for others. But it is really gratifying to see that it no longer is a partisan issue. We have so many Democrats, the former mayor of D.C., the current mayor of D.C., even Marion Barry, Joe Lieberman, and so many others who have come over to the cause of school choice because it is a civil rights issue. It is an issue of basic American fairness. But as every important battle turns out to be, this is really a titanic battle where David is taking on Goliath and where each and every one of us needs to be engaged. And in pursuing this objective in Arizona and elsewhere around the country, I'm often minded of Thomas Paine's prescient words when he was fighting far greater resistance to important ideas of freedom in his own time. He said, "Tyranny, like hell, is not easily conquered. But we have this consolation: the harder the conflict, the more glorious the triumph." And when I see children who previously were consigned to educational cesspools today flourishing in their new schools, I see a system that makes me very, very proud, and I see a revolution that I am hoping will be won in all of our lifetimes.
Thank you for listening. We hope you enjoyed this Praxis Group podcast. For related materials to this podcast and other Federalist Society multimedia, please visit our website at federalistsociety.org/multimedia.